You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Neil Williams. Neil.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. All right. Well, man, you've just had a lot going on with you in your life and everything. I don't know some of that stuff you want to share or not share, but boy, just a definite, you have been busy.
Yeah, it's like it never ends. If it's not one thing, it's another. But this is a good thing. I invited this. So I got engaged last week. Long time coming. Thought about it for a long time. I'm a slow roller, dude. I'm 35. So I have no kids, never been married, and I was very content with that.
Right.
And I've made that very clear. But I'm excited. We're excited. So, yeah. It's a big step, though.
It is a big step. It is a big step. Have y'all set a date yet, or just still?
No, because we are looking to buy a home in the next year, and you know as well as I do, that's a whole thing in itself. So we hadn't even – really, we're looking at – what's our budget? Do we want to have a big wedding? Do we want to have a small wedding? You know, because they can, you do a small one, it's nice, or you can do a big one, and it's really nice too. But what was your wedding like? Did you have a big one or small one?
I would go with a smaller wedding, bigger house. I mean, well, it's a special day. I had a medium-sized wedding, I guess, but, you know, and some of that I didn't really have a chance because her family's pretty large. Let's say so that just got a whole lot of people there real quick. But yeah, that's, you know, it's a good time to sell a house and a bad time to buy a house right now, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Dollar for dollar, pound for pound. So that's a consideration.
That's kind of where we're at. We're much more excited. Well, hold on. We're excited about both, but we really want, we've saved and we're still saving and we want to invest in that home. We want to get a nice place. So I think we're more concerned about the home than we are about a big old wedding. But like you said about her family, we have a lot of friends and it'd be hard for us not to have a big one. Just because we have so many people we would want to be there.
Right.
So we'll see. One thing at a time.
You know, and you can have a big one, you know, you can still have a big one and be careful about how you do the venues and what you offer and how much food is there, you know, post-wedding stuff. But you can still have a big one and not kill you, you know, money-wise. Well, that's good. The other thing I'd say is put everything you have into the house and then some. You know, I bought this or built, I guess, this last home that I'm in. And
did y'all build that from the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know. I couldn't remember. I knew it was new construction, but I didn't know if you built it.
Yeah, I didn't. We had a general contractor we worked with, et cetera, et cetera. But
right.
but we had the spreadsheet. I did the.
That's what I meant.
I did the loan.
You got to choose how it was built.
Oh my gosh, and then some. So funny. You can see where we ran out of where I ran out of money, and he's it's like, oh, this room is carpeted. Like, yeah, there's no hardwoods in this, you know, ran out of money.
Dude.
It's all fine. It's a nice beige carpet, and it's done real well. So, but.
Those wood floors are no joke.
But you know what?
I used to put those in people's homes.
No, but I got the square foot in there, man. I you know, look, I got the square footage in there.
Yeah.
I said, well. You know, floors can always come later. And honestly, you know, you will I mean, God willing, you will make more money. You will make more. You'll be more gainfully employed as time runs on. And then if you want to get the carpet out of there, whatever it was that, you know, if you guys do end up building a house, or if you just get, you know, just get something, you know,
get it. The price of lumber right now, man, the price of lumber right now and the way builds are going, that is not happening for us. But who knows? We're at the point now where it could do anything. You know, it could get really bad really quick, or it could turn around. We'll see. Anybody's guess.
Time will tell, man. Yeah, but that sounds, well, that's exciting for you. I'm happy for you. Yeah. And that's,
thank you.
That's a game changer and a life changer. Making that kind of a, making that commitment in a,
yeah,
a baptism of sorts, making that public, you know, so with the engagement.
Well, it'll go right along with our topic, because that, yes, was a big part of it, the commitment to it, because I reached a point, and I have a good friend who I talked to about this. He was engaged, or he was with his significant other for like 15 years, and they didn't care about the marriage thing, and it wasn't a big issue. And it came to the point to where someone asked him, like, you know, why aren't you married? And he said, well, it's just not a big deal. You know, we live together, we love each other, and that's the way it is. I said, so what are you worried about? Why wouldn't you make that commitment to her? Why wouldn't you make that declaration to her if you really are? And that's how I felt. I felt, you know, if I really want this person to know that I'm fully committed to this relationship, and this is a personal decision, it's different for everybody, but I know how important that is to her, and what is important to her is important to me. And so I came to a point where for me to be fully committed, I thought it was necessary to take that step. And so I think there's certain areas in our lives where there's things we need to do to show that we're fully committed to that, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is an important step in the process. And then later on with setting a date and tying the knot and all that good stuff is the second part of that, you know, so that'll be great.
My friend Will called me, and he left a voicemail because I had missed the call, and he said, I just want to say congratulations. And he said, you know, it's a wonderful thing. He's been married, he has kids, and he said, you know, marriage is a great thing. He said, you know, next is planning the wedding, and I don't have any advice. I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Like, this isn't Willie. This is Will, right?
It's no, not. Really, yeah, this is another guy. Another guy. Will. No, Will. Will's a insurance agency owner. Good guy.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'll see you on Tuesday. Yeah, man. That wedding planning is stressful, regardless of your, you know, role in that. That can be pretty stressful. So. Yeah, that's going to be fun. These are some fun times ahead, and
oh yeah,
it's going to be good. So yeah, making that commitment, man, is, you know, relationships, but also right with our work endeavors and our businesses or coaching business or consulting business, what have you. So, and. Mm-hmm. Man, I know that, I've stayed in there. You know what I mean? It changes shape sometimes, and then it comes around. So it's really, really interesting. Kind of stayed in there, but being willing to accept some other opportunities, that are still coaching and consulting. So it was interesting, because before it was just kind of private practice, and then it got into executive coaching, and that ran hard, and it went back into private practice and some coaching, and now it's private practice and some UFC type of coaching, if you will, with fighters.
And that's exciting.
Does
that not make things, you know how things can, repetitive, and you could feel like you're, did that not kind of spice things up?
It did. It certainly did. One of my fighters that I work with was supposed to be the co-main event this weekend. And at the last minute, the opponent comes up grossly overweight, but with some sort of a injury. And so all this led up to, like, I mean, bottom of the ninth inning, the other fighter backs out.
Yeah. After all the camp, all this investment.
It's just like, how do I cope? Like, I didn't see that one coming. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, so I did. Like, hey, man, you know, this happened for a reason. Or, hey, it's not a man, actually. But anyway, hey, it happened for a reason. Let's just see what's going to go on. Something better will come of it, you know. And look, you know, let's just get a mindset with it. And so I think, I think she'll get a fight out of Misha Tate here out of it. That's a big name. So,
yeah, it is.
So I would do everything I can to act as if this was a win. I mean, it wasn't a win. But you showed up. You were.
Even though it doesn't happen, you don't want to be the person who backs out. You know,
no.
You never want to be the person who backs out.
And you deserve, anyway, and then you deserve to fight.
Yeah.
That person again, if that isn't in the cards for you with the matchmaker, you know, the fight maker, the matchmakers, certainly get the next fighter up, if you will.
One of the reasons I really like Masvidal, because he came in the clutch where he was like, well, I'll fight, you know, and that I respect, because he understood, and he basically kind of, he made a huge sacrifice to even go out there and do that for that fight. But that shows that he understands, like, just like you were saying, you know, you deserve to get that fight. You trained for it.
You trained for it. A just as good, if not better, fight next go around, given the fact that you delivered on what you did. But sometimes, you know, it's just, you don't see it that way. I mean, it's the experience, and the experience didn't, you know what I mean? You're so, and you have to be as a fighter, just so focused, you know, you're not necessarily thinking, oh, well, I'll just kind of pull back up 5,000 feet and look at this analytically. It's like, no, you know, and you know, you're not going to do that. You were training for this moment, and then you train for the next moment or whatever. So anyhow, and then, so yeah, that's been fun. And you know, like you said, it's interesting because you're working with different life circumstances, and, you know, you're just in this kind of paramilitary-ish, you know, paradigm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like Simon Says a lot of times. But anyway, it's interesting. So it's been fun. It's been fun because I've learned a lot. I think I've learned so much, you know, particularly about that industry and how that industry works, you know. So I continue to learn and see where it goes and then go from there. Oh, yeah. And I did some equestrian coaching. Again, not about how to ride, just the mindset with the riding. Everybody's fear is to fall off the horse, and that might be coming back here in the fall.
And then that's interesting to see how you continue to find ways to thrive in what you do and explore different avenues, but continue to push forward. I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of people who, if it's not what they know and what they're comfortable with, well, then what am I to do? You know, that's not my area.
Well, if you have a good or service that you offer people, you know, you need to, at first, as a when your business is getting started, you're finding out, okay, what would be my best audience for my goods or services, right? And so it takes that first pass, but with what we do sometimes applies to multiple populations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of people, if people in recovery, executives making not so good decisions, and you have, you know, horse riders scared of falling off a horse, you have fighters that need to be laser focused in the moment but also have a sense of confidence and comfort underneath that. And so so what happens is I think, you know, and this will probably happen to you, you just need to be sensitive to other opportunities. There may be other opportunities with different populations that come to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's your job. Well, I'll speak for me. It was my job to execute on that, right?
Right.
So it's not that, I'll clear it up. I mean, I'm not the go-getter that people think I am. I was, and it produced a very steady, you know, a lot of contacts and a lot of people that I know. But because of that go-getting in the past, it's just created its own inertia. It's created its own machine, right? That things just kind of come to me now, not because of all the hard work and groundwork that I did. Okay. So I'll take responsibility for that, but people are like, wow, how do you have the time for all this stuff? It's either I say yes or I say no. You know? Right. So anyway, so yeah.
When I think there's a certain point, you get out there and you put yourself out there so much to where people start coming back to you, you know, and then once they start coming back to you and you respond and you deliver, well, then they're going to continue coming back. And then you're kind of just moving. Like you said, that machine has been created.
And then the word of mouth, and then you're right. Right.
And it's just like they say, you know, sales get customers, operations keeps the customer. And so you got to make sure that you're operating and also selling yourself, because it is selling yourself. It is a business. You have to go out there and market yourself, but you better deliver too.
Got to deliver. You got to deliver on the backside of that. And so that is so true, you know, and been doing a lot of attorney work or attorney mediated work recently. Woo. And some of these guys, man, they're on it. You know what I mean? The attorneys, I mean, you screw that up, you're on blast, you know, for multiple things, but you're boy, talk about, make sure you deliver on these attorney mediated cases, you know, like, okay, yeah, we're on it, you know,
yeah,
to a better place. We're going to die trying, but we're certainly going to put in the work and hope for a good result. And so, yeah, good point.
It's a different atmosphere working with attorneys, man. Those conversations are not normal. Like, it's pretty intimidating if you're not used to it. Well, that's pretty intimidating even if you are used to it. It's intimidating, period.
Yeah, this family court stuff is extremely. I'd rather be on a death penalty trial. Some of this family court stuff is just, it's brutal. So I've been really, really staying away from that after taking on a few of those, and it was just brutal, you know, for me anyway. I met somebody in my shoes who kind of left what I was doing on the counseling and coaching side and went into the fire with family work all as a full-time thing. And I'm like, oh wow, you know,
good for them.
Yeah, good for them. No, no, they love doing that work, and I'm just like, whew. You know, God love you. So anyway.
Yeah.
So, so keeping with that commitment and rolling through, you know, staying committed, but also being nimble.
Yep. When I think with commitment, with whatever it is, the hardest thing for me to understand was that you don't just get to do anything based on emotions and based on the occurrence of something. Like you're talking about these curveballs, like with the fighter, you know, something comes along. Well, what does that change for you? You know, should it change anything for you at all?
Yeah.
You know? Because it certainly doesn't mean that you just quit.
No, just
because the opponent has backed out. Well, I guess the goal's still the same.
Yeah. You know?
And so I had become so accustomed to, no, I don't want to say just running. It is that, but it's not that simple. I would just go to something else and it was easier to just keep starting over. Because when you start over, you get to play ignorant again, and you don't have any more responsibility. So you show up and then it's on everybody else again. So anytime a situation would get complicated, I knew if I left that and went and started something over somewhere else where people didn't know me or in a different situation, I wasn't held responsible. And I was the new guy again. I was innocent again.
Right.
And so it was that all of the pressure was taken off. And it's such a, that's why when I talked about it a few weeks ago, that's why I said that it was cowardly, because that's how I truly felt after doing that for years, is I just felt like a coward, because anytime stuff was left up to me, I just would drop it and run and leave it to everybody else. And they're left with this mess.
Yeah. You know, kind of getting back to this fighter or other coaching clients, you know, when you talk about success, sometimes the person is stuck in their vision of what that success looks like. It's almost like it has to happen their way. You know what I mean? And if it doesn't happen their way, it really throws them a loop. And I'm sitting on the outside like, no, you know, just be flexible. Like there's other ways to skin this cat or, you know, to move forward. Yeah. But man, I was really hoping this and this and this would happen. And then this and this and this would happen. Like, man, you know, you can't, you're not in charge. You can't control life and certain things that are so mitigated by hundreds of other people, you know what I mean? So it's pretty interesting how, even though it was kind of a win, it was just because it didn't happen the way they wanted to happen, they're kind of having to grieve that loss, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because we all have our, whether you want to admit it or not, we all have our idea of what the end result looks like. And if, like you said, if we get too obsessed, if we get too obsessive about that, you can get lost. And so one of the things that has helped me quite a bit is working on staying present. Mm-hmm. And when I'm able to stay present, it doesn't really matter what happens, because if something happens, I'm right there in the moment and I've got to focus on, okay, how do we handle this event right now? And how do we get through it? And if I do that every day, day after day, moment after moment, thing after thing, all of a sudden you've reached where you were, the end of your journey, where you were headed, and you followed through. You stayed committed to the process because you weren't worried about 2 weeks from now.
Right.
Well, this just happened today. What about 2 weeks from now when we're supposed to be there? Well, let's just worry about today.
Right.
And then tomorrow we'll worry about tomorrow.
Right.
Staying committed is staying present. And just being there and always being there, not freaking out, getting stuck in your, well, I thought it was going to be this way.
Right.
You thought wrong.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just kind of like, oh, I'm going to transfer from the government to the private sector. Oh, I'm in the private sector. Oh, I'm going to open up this office. Oh, that's good. I'm going to open up another office. Oh, now I have two offices. Oh, now this other stuff is coming up. So other types of clients and whatever else, and other travel. So, you know, if you look at that story, right? I mean, each one of those was a goal that was attained, which led to the next goal, if you will, right? Which was obtained, and then so it's kind of like a snowball. You know, it rolls, it collects mass the more the snowball rolls, you know.
Yeah, and then do you think, try to ask this question the right way, I feel like committing to things has made living a disciplined lifestyle much easier. And I mean, they complement each other. A disciplined lifestyle complements commitment, but also commitment complements living a lifestyle of discipline. You know, they complement each other. I don't know that you can do one without the other. It wouldn't make sense to me, because the other thing is if you're not committed to anything, it's pretty selfish. So you're stuck in living for yourself. And I don't see the discipline in that, because every time I've committed to something, it's not just for me. I mean, there's personal commitments, you know, for your health, for your fitness and stuff like that. But a lot of our commitments, professional and otherwise, involve other people. And if I'm unwilling to do that, what does that say about me? Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm always thinking about these topics, about how they also affect other people. You know, in church yesterday, the guy who was speaking made a really good point. He said, everybody's a people person. You may not like to
be. Like it or not, that's right.
Yeah, we're all people. A people person. We're made for each other. Mm-hmm. It's always been so simple for me. I've always thought, you know, if we weren't meant to work together and help each other, why the hell are we all in the same place? Why are we all right next to each other?
Right. It's
like, that's not an accident in my mind. Exactly. And that's just my belief. But it just seems to all come back together, you know?
It does. It does, you know. I know some people that avoid church or whatever. I remember a guy was made analogies like, you're sitting at home wearing your Cowboys uniform and you're watching TV church, and this is before COVID, you know what I mean? And you're cheering on and you got your uniform on, but you're not in the game, you know. You need to go, you need to be present, you need to interact with folks or be in a Sunday school group or a home study group, or at least go to big church and do something that with, you know, a function. So, you know, you gotta be present to win, you know, really win anyway. And
that the same thing with the virtual stuff, you know, virtual meetings were helpful in that time, but they're not the same, and one can't replace another. You know, conversations like this are good, but you and I both know that when we get together in person, it's totally different. And there's 100 times more benefit. You feel the energy of the other person and you communicate better. It's just on a whole other level. And I think it also shows more investment. You know, when you're willing to get out there and be with someone rather than, I'll meet you on the computer. I'll meet you on the screen. Like, I mean, I didn't even have to put on pants if I didn't want to. You know, you can skate through those situations pretty easily. And that comes to coaching too. When you do contracts, you know, doing a contract is so someone's committed. They need to have skin in the game.
Yes.
You know, it's not just because you want to make sure you can predict your earnings. It's so you want to make sure the person's going to stay committed to the process, because it's not a 2-week deal.
Yeah. It isn't, right? So that's why in the coaching sphere, in the straight coaching sphere, you want that 90-day, at least a 90-day commitment as part of that engagement letter or coaching contract or whatever mechanism you use, because you want that person to be committed to the coaching process like you'll be committed to the coaching process from your angle of it. So yeah, some of these things, but like I said, some of them are more open-ended, you know? So yeah, it's interesting. It really is. So
you having trouble?
No, I was just having to adjust my feet here. Yeah.
Well, you talked about wanting to talk about wanting to discuss, excuse me, I said talk about twice. You discuss wanting to get into the topic of our circle, our environment, the people in our environment that we keep close to us. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You did a video recently on that, and there is a lot of truth to that. The people that we keep in our circle, you know, that's what we're going to be doing, right? What was it? If you have five friends, you're going to do what three of them are doing, or something like that. I mean,
is that what they say?
I don't know if that's a Charles thing or something. I don't know. Anyway, but I don't know.
He's got some gems.
Yeah. No, dude. Yeah. That was one of them. I mean, I think that. So I think, you know, that's absolutely spot on. And if we're working with people that aren't happy with their situation, but yet they decide to continue to hang around negative people or the dealer. We talked about the drug dealer roommate on that one guy or whatever, you know, like, well, of course he relapsed, you know.
Yeah.
The negative past relationship, negative friends or friends that are just, I don't want to say it, just unhealthy. Right. So yeah. that's going to impact you. And so, you know, there is a lot of truth to that. And man, this is going to sound pretty bad too. I don't know if there's a good way to say it. But if you look the part, sometimes you are the part, not all the time, but, or you'll get into that part. So I think not only this holds true with who you keep in your company, but I think it also holds true with how you portray yourself in social media. What are you doing in your social media? You know, who are you doing it with in your social media? You know what I mean? And so, you know, so different social media platforms reveal different sides of me, but the Instagram one right now is pretty heavily weighted on UFC.
Yeah.
And man, the DMs and phone calls I've gotten, but because of the way I put some things out there, people, you know, assumed that I was even in a bigger spot than I was. Let's just say that, you know.
Right.
There were two people who had to go like, whoa, 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 no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not the vice president of UFC or anything. I've never. These are just pictures, man. This is what I, you know, this is who I interact with.
That does. That's
what. It's the same, right. It's the same rule. Who are you interacting with in these venues? And then, you know, that gets documented on social media. People's opinions or thoughts form, etc. So go ahead. Yeah,
it makes a big impact because people see it. People treat you like the part sometimes, not all the time. But like you're saying, it's rare that you look this way over here and are not doing the same thing over there, right? And the most common thing I hear with the younger guys when I work with the younger guys who, and we'll talk about just recovery first. So guys who get sober, like, why don't I leave my friends? You know, those are my friends. I love my friends. I'm not getting new friends. I'm not saying you have to get new friends. I am telling you that your old friends are doing the things that you say you never want to do again.
That's right.
So what are you and your friends going to do? Well, I'll go help them get sober. Like, will you? You and your super sober powers are going to go save all 10 of these guys and you're the only one who's got any sobriety, which, mind you, it's only 60 days. Like, if you really think that's going to happen, I have some news for you, man. It probably won't. And the other thing is, if you're really committed, if you're really committed to your recovery or your lifestyle, then why would you invite people who are living the opposite of that into it?
Right.
And that's why these relationships were so important for me, because I still know the guys that I used to run around with, the ones that aren't dead, the ones that aren't dead and in prison. I still love them and I still talk to them. Do I see them every day? No, because they can't do the things I'm doing. They won't do the things I'm doing. And there's no room for them, you know? And I had to make up my mind, you know, do I really want to make myself more comfortable and make them feel better by being around them and keeping them around me? Or do I want to build a life that's going to help me, my family, and other people?
Right.
And so your environment's huge. People talk about, I don't want to change. Well, is it that you don't want to change, or are you just afraid because you don't know who you are? Because I didn't know who I was.
Right. And you go back with these bad friends or negative associates or whatever. There is a sense of comfort there. And I know that just sounds as crazy it could be as it could be, but there is that kind of sense of comfort there because you know what you're going to be getting. You know that person's going to accept you, right? You're not going to be rejected per se by that person, even though, good Lord, they might have a needle in their arm or whatever on the way to the next crime. But at least you know that person, right? And yeah. So, and these younger clients, for me, over the past years, I get these high school clients, 17, 18, say, man, I've known that guy since I was in fifth grade. It's almost like blood in, blood out. Like it was like the...
Dude, it is. I'll kill somebody for that. No, you won't. And you shouldn't. He's the same one who stole your dope and helped you look for it.
There you go. That's right. That's right. And so I'm thinking, oh, wow. You know what I mean? But, you know, that's talk about the client's perspective. Like, that's like a lifetime achievement award. Since if I've known you since like elementary, like we were ride or dies back in fifth grade. Now it's 11th. That's 6 years, man. And that's more than half my life or whatever. So anyway, so it is kind of an interesting scale. We have to adjust to scale with some of the younger clients and be patient with them because they're just not going to see it. And their mindfulness is a little bit handicapped, not only by chemical use, but by sometimes just a lack of maturity, you know?
Well, because you can't see that really in 10 more years, most of those people won't be there. You know, it's not that anybody doesn't care about anybody. It's that you hadn't seen what life does yet. But we all know that at 17 years old, we know everything. You can't tell me nothing. And these are not my friends. These are my family. I don't even feel like I know my family. These are my family.
Oh, my family. Yeah, wow.
And it's a deep level of connection, and they're just so in it.
Yeah,
man. But it's that's the harsh reality, you know, because that's when your first experiences with heartbreak, betrayal, and all those things happen because you're so sold out to these people. And then it's a matter of time before they start doing you dirty. And that's when reality hits and you come home to mom and dad and you're like, you are not going to believe what happened. I'll tell me about it. It's like,
right.
You know, I bet you I will believe it. You know, your best friend, Ricky, just screwed you over.
Right. And isn't that the battle? I'm kind of thinking of youth cases you've had, I've had. I mean, that's the friends and the relationships are just, they're part of our obstacles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then here we are as coaches trying to help them overcome those obstacles, man. And that is easier said than done.
The personal experience has helped me a lot there because one of my close friends, well, there's more than one, but I share with them an experience of when one of my friends overdosed and his friends left him and he died. You know, they left him to die. They left because they didn't want to get in trouble. And there's a million of those stories. That same story, heroin overdose or whatever, usually opioids, something heavy.
Yeah.
Overdose. People take their steal the stuff out of their pockets, including their wallet. These are their friends, though, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Take their money, take their drugs. Oh, I didn't want him to get caught. Why'd you take his wallet? The wallet's not illegal. Well, you know, I'm just saying.
You'll love this. You can't make this up, Neil. 16-year-old female client, you know, oh, yeah, runs away, gets into the dope lifestyle in these hotels in you know, Tarrant County. I'll have to go there. So she does come in. She goes, oh, these people make me feel special. And I said, really? She says, yeah, they even came up with a nickname. That's a term of endearment just for me. I said, well, what is it? She goes, Shawty. Shawty. I'm like,
Does she know that she's like the 9,782nd shawty for just Tarrant County?
Did that just break out in 1989 and in some of the first rap videos? Like, and the look on my, I don't even know what the look on my face was. I wish I would have known, but it was all I could do to hold it together. Okay. Sounds like a special name to you.
Sounds like some sharp guys.
Shawty. Little shawty. Mm.
Yeah, dude, anyway. That's dangerous.
Yeah, that's, I mean, dangerous. Meanwhile, let's not think that you're next to death. There's crimes being committed. The cops are probably in the parking lot getting the other half of the people. There's human slavery and trafficking. I mean, you know, just don't worry about that. Just shawty. Yes, that's good. So,
good one. Crazy. We cared about and accepted. But at what price?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, oh man, that's another thing too, Ben. But yeah.
After gaining some maturity with my relationships and the people in my life, the other side to that is now I have standards for the people who are close to me. You know, I expect them to do certain things. I expect them to take care of themselves. I expect them to do well. And if they don't, I confront them. Or I ask them, you know, if they're doing something wrong, say if they're sneaking around on their significant other and they start sharing that with me, and I'm not going to congratulate them on that. Like, I'm just not. I'm going to bring it up and say, why are you doing it? Like, you know better than that. Or if they start using again, so why are you doing that again? You know what this does, you know, or they're taking money at work or something, or doing something under the table that they shouldn't be doing. Why are you doing that? Why are you risking that? What do you mean? And I expect them to respond to that, because if they're not doing the things that if they're not holding themselves to the same standard that I hold myself to, then we're not going to mesh well. And I also feel that I don't do them any favors. So it's kind of my duty as their friend to hold them accountable to that, because they've told me, that my friends have all told me one time or another what they want to achieve and what they want to accomplish. So I listen to that and I take it seriously. So I want to help them, and helping them doesn't mean validating their bullshit.
Correct.
Themselves. And so that's something I really, it's hard to do too. Especially when it hurts them.
Right.
It kind of sucks, but sucks more to watch them screw up their life.
Right. And then you don't want to be enabling them either on the right. next a negative aspect of that, right?
Yeah.
So you have to walk a super fine line or a chalk line, you know, and that's a tough situation, you know. So seen that a lot, you know, where it's like, hey, you know, there's a guy you and I know that's always in and out of prison. And, man, this last go around that he kind of came out, I'm like, hey, man, this is my lane. And anything outside that lane, brother, you're just going to have to pound sand. I said in a loving way. I didn't say that pounds. You know what I mean? But this guy, you know, has just got to get on the stick. But like you said, well, I'm doing this. Well, I'm doing that. And then all of a sudden, that bad snowball happens, and next thing you know, he's in jail again for X, Y, or Z. And yeah, so anyway, certain
things that can't be compromised.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Especially, yeah. And especially when it's your second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth negative rodeo, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and the person is slow to learn from experience sometimes, but I mean, it's unfortunate, but yeah, we can't be there enabling some of the negative stuff, even though we care about the person. So.
Yeah, that's a fact.
It's one thing right. You work with, but then it can get worse when it's your own family because you're operating with multiple layers of relationship and blinders, and you know, you're blinded by your hopes and dreams for that person and stuff like that. So it can be.
And that's what I think's most important about having outside the family relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, well, my family watches out for me. Your family also loves you so much that it gets in the way sometimes mm-hmm. of honesty.
And they have an agenda too. The family has an agenda.
Yeah. Because your family members will do something that hurts you so that they don't hurt. Because I've watched a lot of fathers and mothers do things for their kids that made them feel better when I had explained to them how it was killing their child. But they said, well, you know, I just think, so are we doing it for your child or are we doing it for you?
Yeah.
And that's you better duck and dodge when you sit out because you might get hit. You just might, but it's true. It's absolutely true.
That's a fantastic point. Seen that a lot too, and there's an element of denial that goes into that sometimes. No, it's for him or her. It's for them. So no, it's not for us. No. As a matter of fact, we're giving this person a fresh new start or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
It's not for us.
How would this be for me? I'm spending my money. Like, oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah. That's a good point, man. So, yeah, we definitely run into that. So, yeah, with the commitment and who we keep around us in our company, two big parts of everybody's lives, but certainly our lives is we're juggling personal things as well as business things, you know? So
yeah,
good stuff to know, man. Good stuff to know. So, all right, man. Well, we got 2 minutes left, man. 2 minute warning.
It's coming down to the wire. I really appreciated this, man. I've enjoyed it. So it's been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It has been fun, man. It's, I'm glad to have you on the show and be here. And it's really added a great element to the show's history, you know.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Like I said last week, I think it's our five. It's been just about 5 years. I think we're right underneath that 5 years running. And so, man, you've just come a long way real fast. I mean, I say that every time I see you, you know, but you've really done a fantastic job and with your business and coaching and consulting. And so I know you're going to be a great success and all your endeavors in the future. So
thank you. That's we'll be awesome. Seeing a lot of each other. I'm sure of that.
Oh yeah, man. We'll be around about here in the Metroplex, going to different events and shared events and stuff like that. So
you know it, man. It'll be fun.
All right, man. Well, go ahead and tell the listeners how they can reach you. And
they can find us at, your show, concierge_coaches on Instagram, and then the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. You can find me at Elevated Lifestyle Academy on Facebook, Instagram, and ElevatedLifestyleAcademy.com. Where can they find you, Bruce?
You can find me at ConciergeCoach.net. So, well, thanks for being here. And everybody, thanks for continuing to listen to the show and stick with us. We got some great times ahead here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio, and we'll see everybody next week. Take care, everybody. See you later.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.